This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, Australia. Welcome to My Millennial Money. Glenn James here and...
John Pidgeon.
Coming to you for a little budget chat. Now, the budget was handed down last night, the federal budget of Australia. Now, John, you would have been up with popcorn, with booze, all the fun stuff.
Yep.
How did you spend your budget night?
Yeah, look, it was my youngest son's birthday, so I was eating plenty of cake. I stumbled across a budget paper that was 209 pages. I didn't read any of it.
So you were well and truly caked up and ready to have a big sugar party.
Yeah, that's right. Interesting night though, wasn't it?
Oh, totally. Now, what are some of your kind of high-level thoughts?
Yeah, so I think I'd just start by saying it's a great marketing exercise for the government to put out what the people want to hear, and the devil's in the detail, which I'm not 100% sure on either. But I think unemployment is one thing that was probably no surprise to people if they were tracking it, but it did expect to be around 8-9% during COVID or after COVID. So that's forecast around 5%. So that's a nice win for the country, and it just shows how resilient we are in that space.
Yeah, and I guess, John, most demographers would say that 5% is basically full employment because people might choose not to work at times and just the general ebbs and flows of life. So I think it does appear that the economy is bouncing back from the COVID-19 recession. Mm. And I thought it was interesting that the government really did spin it in a way that, you know, our deficit is only $116 billion, but it's $50 billion better off than we predicted last year.
Yeah, it's like a good old graph or graph. You can read it and taint it whichever way you want, can't you?
Yeah, totally. And do you think, like, you know, these numbers, you know, 25 billion, 29 billion, 1 billion, 2 billion, like it just gets to the point where it means nothing to the average punter like us, right?
Correct. And that's a really good point. Like, we are the average punter, and not many would sit down over a water cooler and discuss probably last night's findings. So it's all just get on with our life. And that's why I think it is a bit of a marketing thing to talk the talk and try to be convinced high level without anyone really reading into what's actually being spent.
Yeah, and I think it was more of a political budget, and I believe there will be an election sooner than later if the government can turn around some of its current perceptions, because it's particularly, you know, and yes, I know COVID happened in a recession, but, you know, we've got a Liberal government basically handing out candles like an Oprah live recording, like you get a candle, you get a candle, everyone gets a candle, except if you're the environment, no candle for you. But no. Any other... high-level thoughts that you might have had?
Yeah, I thought it was a good outcome for women in a number of ways. They're obviously encouraging women to get back into the workforce through childcare subsidies. Property, you could see, is having a win there with single-parent families at least. And I think in the area of domestic violence and safety, there was a lot of money put into that, which I'm not saying is always women, but generally speaking, that was a good outcome.
Yeah, and I don't know, John, I personally don't love that they hang the whole childcare thing under it's a women's issue, where I think it's a family issue. And if there's a single dad out there who needs some childcare, well, he will benefit. Or if there's a, you know, working family, mum and dad, two dads, you know, three dads if you're in, what is it, Utah or wherever it is in America, whatever that state is where you can have 15 spouses. It's just like, yeah, and I know it is political because they are trying to let women know that they do care.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was an interesting observation for what it's worth.
Yeah, look, I think as an incentive to have an extra child, given the percentage of subsidies on the second and third child in childcare, that's for sure.
Yeah, totally. But on that childcare thing, John, and this is an interesting point for everyone, you know, these budgets, they have to get royal assent. They have to be approved by the Governor General on behalf of the Queen But before it even gets to the Governor General's desk, it has to get through the Senate. Now, a lot of this stuff that they say might not actually happen. And particularly if there is an election and they lose, it might not happen. And this childcare stuff that they're, you know, crapping on about, it's such a high-level thing because they say, oh, if, you know, there could be up to 250,000 families that will get, you know, $2,200 in subsidies. I was reading some of the finer details, the way it stands at the moment, that's on the assumption that you've got two kids under five.
Yeah.
But if you've got one kid over five and one kid under five, well, that, you know, dicks around with that formula anyway. So you slip through the crack.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be available till July next year anyway, if they do retain government and if it does get through the Senate.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I think that's going back to our point before is we probably, most Australians maybe don't look into detail about how it's going to roll out, and it can slip through the cracks if it doesn't come through, and no one knows anything the wiser, do they?
Yeah, totally. A couple of other points I had, John. I think the government were clearly saying it's too early for austerity, which basically means that's a fancy word for tightening things up. So they're pretty much saying, look, we still need to let the economy breathe. I think they'll use COVID as a bit of a scapegoat if the numbers don't look as promising or better than predicted this year when they come to the budget next year.
Yep.
But yeah, I think it really is a political exercise this year, particularly when, you know, the key selling points, aged care, childcare, infrastructure, first home buyers, you know, their key selling points was totally leaked before.
Yeah.
Like, and it wasn't a backdoor leak. It was a blatant leak. Like, yeah. I'm on the website here on the website that is the bloody National Housing Finance and Investment Corporation website, which has the, you know, the first home loan deposit scheme.
Yeah.
You know, there was a formal announcement listed on the 8th of May, you know, before the budget was released that, you know, that they've established this thing. So it wasn't a let's tell a few journos at the pub to get this out. They were blatantly telling people the budget before, which means there was just no surprises. To me, that was the key, I guess, selling points that the government wanted to get across.
It always interests me with infrastructure spend, like the amount of billions that they spend on infrastructure, and most of it is for good cause, but where is that money going and how much does it actually cost to build a road? Like $2 billion for upgrades to the Great Western Highway between Katoomba and Lithgow. So, yeah, so does it end up being two? Does it end up being four? Who knows?
Mm. Well, that's the thing. Like the infrastructure, it's always a jobs, jobs, jobs type play because you get flow on to a whole heap of different industries. But yeah, so I think their key thing was the infrastructure, childcare, and obviously, given we've just had the Royal Commission into aged care, they've allocated $17.5 billion over 5 years to that. And, you know, they had to do that just after the Royal Commission. And if you've ever been to an aged care facility, you would agree that it's probably not enough. But, you know, there isn't unlimited money for everyone.
Yep.
Let's talk about this first home buyers extension of the 10,000 spots to the 5% deposit.
Hmm.
So they've said we'll throw another 10K out next financial year, but I think it's a backhand way to try and still stimulate the building industry because it's for new homes only, isn't it, John?
That's right. Yeah, so an extra 10,000 spots, 5% deposit, we'll cover the LMI for you and build your home. So, construction has a win there, doesn't it? But knowing what we know out there at the moment, very hard to find a builder, very hard to find titled land in decent, half-decent locations. So, not sure how that will go.
Mm. And you mentioned before that they've actually introduced a new scheme called the Family Home Guarantee, which enables a 2% deposit for single parents under that similar scheme. Now, John, this is confusing to me. I'm reading on the website. It says from July 1, 2021, 10,000 family home guarantees will be made available over four financial years. Now, I first read that as, okay, is there 2,500 a year or is it 10,000 over 4 financial years.
Yeah, I didn't read that far into it. All I knew is there's 10,000 spots. So whether that's taken up in the first year, I don't know how they govern the 4 years or assess that it's going to last for 4 years other than capping it per year.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I'm honestly not clear if it is 10,000 in total over 4 financial years or 10,000 per financial year.
Oh, no, I definitely took it as 10,000 in total.
Yeah, and this is the whole thing. Like, if that's the case, it's bugger all.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, and I suppose when it first came out with the low deposit scheme, there's the ability to extend it if it's taking off and there is demand. So, but I think that's a good win, like 2% deposit. It sounds pretty attractive, no LMI, similar to your 5%, but the underlying fact is I still need to be able to service that loan. And as a single parent with dependents, servicing is definitely restricted.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, it's probably an announcement in vain. But then again, like, there would be legitimate people paying rent with some savings that could easily service a mortgage. So
yep.
I think it probably has legitimate street credit, but the shoe's just got to fit, right, with all these things.
Yeah. I'd like to see out of those 10,000 what locations they're taken up in, Melbourne and Sydney. Yeah, tough on servicing.
But it's interesting,
it?
John, like the just so people understand how it works, if you don't have a 20% deposit, so we'll use an example of a $500,000 house somewhere out of a capital city, if you don't have $100,000 worth of security or 20%, you'll have to pay LMI, lender's mortgage insurance. So basically what this scheme does is the government is saying, hey, under the 5% scheme, you bring 5% or $25,000 and you can then borrow the rest and we'll guarantee the balance and no LMI. Or under the 2% scheme, you bring the 2%, and my math isn't that fast, under the family home guarantee and the government will provide the security for the 18%.
Correct.
So you still, for the home, you're still having to borrow 98% or 95%. So you've still got to service that full amount,
yes.
But it's just in the background, the government is saying, we will go into bat for you. If you can't afford to pay this and it collapses, we'll cover it.
Yeah, and that's right. Just, as we say, the devil's in the detail. So what are the interest rates going to be like on that? The servicing check's going to be higher because you're still in LMI territory. So they're still going to be doing a double check on your situation.
Yeah. Another interesting one, and it's not for everyone, but the First Home Super Saver Scheme, where you could put in 15 grand a year as a pre-tax salary sacrifice or personal deductible contribution, that's increasing from $30,000 to $50,000. So you might decide, look, you know, over the next 4 years, I might put 12 and a half grand a year in and get to 50 grand in a tax effective way to save for your first home deposit. So that's also a win if you are using that scheme.
What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that many people were capping it out that they decided to increase it, or was just let's throw that figure up anyway?
I don't know the data, but it sounds good because the property market is just going berserk. I think they just have to really tip their cap to first home buyers. And just on the family home guarantee thing, that is for new or existing homes where the extension of 10,000 at the 5% deposit is for new homes only.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of super, I found it interesting that when the Treasurer announced that they were doing some things with super, like, so at the moment, if you earn under $450 a month, your employer doesn't have to pay super. So they're ditching that. So from $0, if you're earning $450, your employee will have to pay super. So, and that does mainly affect women.
Business owners.
Well, and business owners, because they'll have to pay for it. Jeez, John, you capitalist pig. Gosh, back off, all right? But I guess to the crux of it, John, there was no direct handouts, there was no direct stimulus, but they did continue the low and middle income earners tax offset that went in force last year, which basically saved a taxpayer earning up to 90 grand a year, $1,080 a year. So that's just continuing. And the small business asset write-off is also continuing.
Yeah.
Another couple of things that I found of note, you know, you mentioned domestic violence funding of 1.1, mental health and suicide, $2.3 billion. So that's always a welcomed investment. The NDIS got another $13.2 billion. And John, on the NDIS, I mean, a lot of the times we think about the NDIS as helping people who maybe can't meet the definition of daily living, like feed themselves, clothe themselves, shower themselves, get out of bed and all that stuff. But there are like, my sister has used it for the twins for different things. So,
right.
You know, it is a really good system. So I, just from personal experience and looking at that, I think it is welcome that that does remain funded.
Yeah, totally.
And the COVID vax got a jab of $1.9 billion to bring you're welcome, to bring that total to about $20 billion in rolling out the vaccine program. But all this, John, was on the proviso and budgeted that the national borders would remain closed in the main until halfway through next year.
Well, they're talking that, aren't they, international middle of 2022.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're all going to spend our overseas Bali holiday and Europe trips and all that on cars and homes and boats. So the COVID tax out there will probably continue for a bit.
Yeah. Did you have to have a vaccine to get to New Zealand?
No, the bubble's open.
Hmm.
So, but I mean, I'll get the vax as soon as it's available. No problems here. But, I don't know. It was a bit of a non-event type budget. I'm just really happy every time they do a budget and they keep their mitts off superannuation, because as a cash pot, it's so attractive for governments to go, oh, let's just, you know, tweak that 1% on that $1 trillion and we can fund this. I think it's good that they did keep their mitts off it. And there was some other stuff for older people around the work test and you know, making the downsides of contribution of 300 grand available to over age 60, not age 65. So there was bits and pieces. And honestly, like, it was an Oprah budget and everyone got a candle, except if you're the environment or tourism operators, basically, because, you know, there was just nothing that was wholesale in terms of moving the economy to a more green economy. Like, it was just, it was basically nothing. And, you know, they know that the borders are going to be closed for, at least another 12 months. And if you can imagine, if you're a tourism operator and the government know that and you've got no one coming and, you know, JobKeeper's pretty much gone and all this stuff, like, it is a little bit like a slap in the face, because it's not as if you've got the money to go and buy a new ute for your tourism business.
It's definitely a concern. Doesn't mean anything,
the asset write-off.
Yeah.
Totally.
Especially if they rely on majority of it being international. But I think for the listeners, it's something like this is okay, let's tune in, let's get a brief understanding of it, and then let's get on with our lives. So I think we just need to maybe track it and see what gets passed through and what's actually the detail of it once it's confirmed.
Do you know what I actually, and I know I'm philosophical and go on these tangents, John, but, you know, I don't like the winners and losers thing.
Yeah.
I just, because a lot of the time, like, to be honest, they reckon the best way to vote is voting for a party that will help people worse off than you. Like, that's a noble way to vote, right?
Yep.
But often we always vote for what we can get, and we're always looking at the budget for what handout I can get from this magical Frydenberg unicorn that's throwing everyone money for me. So I just don't love the winners and losers thing, because it's – and I know I'm in that world of, you know, giving and generosity, and I always go back to relative – situations that, you know, if we are in Australia, on world standards, relatively speaking, we are bloody well off.
We're blessed.
Which doesn't mean much to somebody who's legitimately struggling here. But for all of you out there that, you know, you've got all the money in the world, you know, and you go along your merry life, if you don't get a free $1,000, well, suck it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's
suck eggs.
I don't know. I'm just
You come from the point of view of everyone gets a participation certificate versus the winner and the loser and a fair and equal for everyone.
Yeah, I guess.
And that's cool.
I don't know. Well, no, I think it's good to win on – I'll give an example. It's good. Oh, do you want to go there?
No, look, I get where you're coming from. But generally speaking, what I want to see is that the government's improving the country and the shape that it's in financially, but everyone's getting a fair go. And we're not just providing handouts for people who aren't putting their own hand up to have a fair go.
Yeah.
Or have a go.
Yeah, I get that. And I mean, I'm probably less of the view that everyone gets a participation award because I believe an economy does need a little bit of competition and that sacrifice and reward. Otherwise, you know, could you be bothered studying for 8 years and become a brain surgeon if you're going to get paid $35,000 a year? Like it's just you wouldn't bother. So I think an economy does need benefits for the sacrifices that we make. But again, I think we're going on beyond the scope of the budget. But I just want to say I don't like seeing this winners and losers thing more for the point that it's instantly people are looking at it. What did I get?
Yeah.
Where we need to look at it. Oh, did we actually look after people who don't happen to earn 80 grand a year, who might be earning the minimum wage and less?
And I think in a lot of ways it's a smokescreen for a marketing ploy and I'll do what I want sort of thing. And when you compare the two major parties, their policies are extremely identical.
Well, and that's it. I mean, like both of these major parties, like realistically, there's a lot of political refugees out there because like even this budget that the Liberal Party just handed down as a Conservative government, it's looking very much like a government that's, you know, is not a Conservative government because they're just throwing money everywhere. Yeah. But we know there's an election coming up. It reminds me of the, you know, some of the Howard years when there was a raft of middle class welfare to, you know, and it's, you know, you start throwing money at the middle class and, you know, that's where your votes are. And I think, John, like the fact that there was no money to the environment, for example, most people you ask would be like, yeah, we need to look after the environment. We need to move to a clean economy, right? But they're just within government, and to a point, it would have to be both sides of the government, right? That the rank and file core voter base, it's just not a big enough issue to worry about throwing money at for the average punter. Because why isn't there a line item, you know, aged care, $17 billion, childcare, you know, $2 billion, infrastructure, $15 billion, environment, $12 billion. Like that's kind of because the on balance, the data shows that it's not a vote winner.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
Don't hate me, everyone. Sorry for just ranting.
Well, I'll give you another rant. It's not a rant. It's just a topical conversation is the childcare subsidy. So what if I'm a mother or father that just wants to stay at home and bring my kids up and not necessarily are that keen to get back into the workforce because I'm on this earth to bring my kids up?
Well, I think that leads into a bigger discussion that I had with Peter Singer the other day that they've experimented in some parts of the world around this universal basic income where we just throw everyone 15 grand or whatever it is per year. So the basic needs are met and then, you know, it's enough to help those who can't help themselves.
Yeah.
But then it's not enough for those who want to get out and have some finer things in life.
Yep. No, I don't
know. So I'm all – and to be honest, we do need to get an economist on or some smart person just to really unpack this UBI type discussion because a lot of these money things, and that's why I don't like going there, because they get philosophical and my views are probably not accurate, nor does anyone care about my philosophical view because I'm still trying to work it out myself.
Yeah. No, we're just having two blokes having a yarn.
Just having a chat, John. That's all we're doing. So anyway,
filling well, in time.
We better get this over to Nath to edit. Thanks, everyone, for having a listen. Remember, if you're in Brisbane, 27th of May, it's in about 2 weeks, come along to our live show. Have you got your tickets yet, John, your plane tickets?
No, I was going to ask you about that.
What do you want to know?
Is it going to go ahead? We're not going to get locked in again?
Probably, but that's why I said don't buy the cheap tickets. Buy the ones that are flexible that you can get refunds on and all that.
All right, I'll book them tonight.
All right. Love you, everyone. Thanks, John.
See ya.
I'm flying home tomorrow morning as well.
Ah, so good news. Can't wait to give you a big hug.
Do you want to do next Tuesday's? Sorry?
Can't wait to give you a big hug.
Oh, yeah.
So I know how much you love hugs.
Yeah, feelings mutual. All right, everyone. Thank you so much, and I will see you soon. Bye.
All right. Bye.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
My Millennial Money supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you would like some other giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive, Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa, Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.